people. It's episode 24 of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. This week we're covering the recap of episode 3.03, which is Fireflies, which aired last night or the night before or whenever you're listening to this. I'm not 100% sure. As usual, if you want to talk about the episode or about our podcast about the episode, anything like that, you can reach us on our Twitter, Tumblr, or email. Twitter is at NATW podcast, and then Gmail, it's NATWpodcast@gmail.com, and then our Tumblr is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, the full title, .tumblr.com. So you can always reach us on those. And this week we have a guest host. It's me, Natalie, and it's our other permanent host and mastermind, Karen. And then we have Kristen, who is another Hyperball staff member and Teen Wolf fan. So, hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Hi, everybody. I'm good. I'm really good.
Do you want to tell them what you do on Hyperball or what fandoms you're involved in?
Sure. I started on Hyperball as a viral writer, so you'll see a lot of, like, random original content stuff, so, like, top 10 lists and all that. I started covering Newsroom about 2 months ago, so that's just starting to pick up, so you'll see more of that from me. And I also do Vampire Hype and Rewatchable, so you can catch me on there, too.
Cool. Okay. And how are you today, Karen?
Sleepy, but good. It's 9:45, so I guess it's not that early, but I'm still tired.
I'm quite tired too. I just, though it is the middle of the afternoon for me, I just came back from Paris this morning on the Eurostar, and I got an overnight coach on the way over there that I didn't get much sleep on, so I haven't really caught up on sleep. But it was worth it. For the four people who listen to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast that care, I was there seeing Darren Criss, and so that was fun, as he usually is.
Yay!
Yeah, I'll show you the stuff later, Karen, and anyone else that wants to see. But I posted a photo on Facebook. Not that any of our listeners are friends with me on Facebook, except the ones who are actually my friends. Anyway, it was very good. Moving on from that, it's really not relevant to Teen Wolf. So I watched the episode on the Eurostar on the way back from Paris. That's the end of that story. And now I'm here recording the podcast.
Yeah, so speaking of the episode, Fireflies, our little synopsis here is that Boyd and Cora are under the influence of the full moon, and Scott and Derek seek help from an unlikely ally. So seeing as you're our guest this week, Kristen, why don't you go first with your two favorite quotes, or three, actually, you have, I think?
Well, it's two and then just a phrase that I could not, like, that just kept haunting me. I was like, oh my god, I love this. My first one is Styles' quote, of course, when he is with Lydia in her bedroom, like, he's like walked her back after the whole thing at the pool, whatever, and he says, I know the inner workings of that force. They're not as reliable as people think. I just love that he's like, listen, like, the police force around here, not doing their job. Because we all know that it's true. Like, oh my god.
I've always thought about that with Styles, with, like, right from season one, and kind of the way that he has talked to them over, like, the car system, you know, or knows all about, like, what the codes are. I'm like, he must have really grown up in that police station and knows everyone's job and so many, like, things that civilians aren't really meant to know about, and it amuses me.
Oh, I know. I love in, I think it's season two, where he's riding along with his dad and he just goes to answer the intercom. Slaps his hand.
Yeah, I know, right? It's amazing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And my second one is from before that, just before that, where Lydia, like, first finds the body and she says, I'm supposed to call you first when I find a dead body? And Styles just screams, yes!
Yeah, that was my favorite moment of him in the episode, I think. It was awesome.
It's like, it's classic Teen Wolf, if you can have classic Teen Wolf after, like, two seasons. Because, I mean, this season has been so intense and so, like, action-heavy that I just loved that little moment. It's just so perfect.
I liked the bit with that, with Lydia calling 911, like, she knows about everything, but she's not quite used to thinking, ooh, weird body, it might be supernatural, maybe I should get the guys in on this before, you know, she's still not thinking in that mindset, because she doesn't know really everything, like, she doesn't know about the Alpha Pack, she doesn't know what she just knows that Scott's a werewolf pretty much. So I found that interesting, and I'm going to find it interesting to watch how she develops to, like, you know, become one of the, you know, Teen Wolf Scooby gang or whatever, and know that in those kind of, you know, oh, murder must be one something for us to investigate kind of thing.
Yeah, which is kind of like the opposite of Mama McCall, who calls Stiles at the first sign of anything.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, it showed that really well with both of them in this episode, actually.
Oh, yeah. And then the phrase that just kept, like, haunting me is when Allison's dad says, "The ripping of warm bodies to bloody shreds." He's talking about Cora and Boyd and their, like, need to hunt, and that phrase for some reason just I think it perfectly describes how the Argents see werewolves, like, or how they used to before Scott and all of that happened. Like, it's just the perfect embodiment of the, you know, hunter evil thing that they've been seeing for so long.
Yeah, totally, because I was thinking, like, when I saw that you wrote that down, I'm like, oh my god, Chris Argent, he tries not to be like his family, he tries not to be like Gerard, and we've talked before on the show, actually, about how Gerard's, like, really melodramatic in, like, the way that he says and does everything, but I'm like, it rubbed off a little bit on you, Chris Argent, you do say some really melodramatic, you know, things like this at times as well, so I think, yeah, it definitely does run in the family of kind of their whole attitude.
Yeah, definitely. So what were your favorite quotes, Natalie?
My two were, the first one was actually Isaac. And Isaac was actually, like, probably my favorite character in this episode. There was some really cool stuff with him. But the one that I put down was actually sort of when they're trying to figure out what to do about Boyd and Cora and, you know, what they might do and what the plan is. And someone says something particularly bad about what might happen, and Isaac goes, does anyone want to rethink the plan where we just kill them? And I'll tell you why I put this. I put this because I feel like that purely, we discussed this before, purely because of that one scene where he cried when he healed a dog. Isaac has become, like, this the fandom's, like, wooby, like, this total, like, in the break between the end of season 2 and season 3, like, everything, like, you know, that people talk about with the fandom, whether they're just talking about the characters or writing fan fiction or whatever, people make Isaac out to be this big, soft, sad, pathetic, puppy kind of, like, really vulnerable character, and I think they're all teenagers and fairly vulnerable, but, like, do we remember what Isaac was like before that one scene where he healed the dog? Because he was really sarcastic and mean. Yeah, he was sort of a bit crazy and evil, and now he's sort of not evil exactly. Like, he's in Derek's pack and he's sort of a bit more level-headed. But he's still really sarcastic and dry and amazing and not, like, a soft, wooby character. And so I like that they're kind of driving that home, that Isaac is actually really, like, dry and ruthless. Like, it also is interesting to me that they were, I mean, obviously they kind of knew that killing them might have to be a fact. But do you think, like, once you become a werewolf and the stakes get raised, you become a bit desensitized to the idea of just, like, killing off your friends? Because, I mean, Peter obviously doesn't care about anything, but, like, Isaac was the only one, like, Scott and Derek were both, like, you know, had some sort of guilt about it, but Isaac was like, oh, whatever, kind of, and they were his, you know, his friends, his sort of his pack mates, his litter mates that he got made into a werewolf together. So I found that both interesting, and I kind of appreciated that they're driving home this thing that Isaac is not a sad little baby. And it makes me wonder if they kind of were spying on fandom and saw the way that fandom was sort of obsessing over him and being like, you know what, no, that's not who we think the character is, and we're going to prove it to you.
Yeah, that's a great point, because it really bugs me too when everybody thinks that Isaac's so weepy and stuff. And I mean, that scene with the dog is really great, but I don't think that's his whole character in a nutshell. So I like this version of Isaac. I mean, him wanting to kill Boyd and Cora was probably not the best thing, but I think he was just sort of being sarcastic and funny there, and I always like it when he's like that.
Yeah, and then the other one was actually about the biggest wooby of the show, which is Derek. Basically, it's when him and Scott realize that they've locked Miss Blake in, or the, you know, the teacher, they didn't know who it was at the time, we know who it was, but with Boyd and Cora, once they'd finally thought that everything had been sorted out, and Derek decides to go in there and, you know, help. And Scott says to him, if you go in there alone, you're either going to kill them or they kill you. And Derek kind of pauses and he kind of collects himself and he's like, yeah, that's why I'm going in alone. This is very sad and tragic. You know, I feel like it comes from a lot of, like, Derek's guilt and responsibility issues, which is, it's really good that he has this guilt and responsibility issues, seeing as last season he didn't give a crap about who he was turning into werewolf and what the result was. You know, he didn't have any culpability there, and now he apparently is, like, burdened by it. It's also, like, interesting to me that it bugs me a little bit, but I kind of want to see what they're doing with it. It didn't seem to be just like, ooh, this is my burden, this is my cross to bear, I've got to go in there and do it. It's also like that he wants to save Scott from it. And I think I've mentioned this before. Does Derek think Scott is, like, inverted commas, like, better than the rest of his pack or something like that? That he seems to, like, have Scott on a separate pedestal, or is it just that he's respecting his wishes not to be a part of it? Like, he won't let Scott, like, lower himself to do the stuff that he's doing or that the rest of his pack is doing. That kind of confuses me a little bit. But so I don't know if any of that was coming into it or if it was literally just, this is my guilt, I have to do this, you don't have to be involved in the killing or the being killed.
It's almost like Scott has always kind of held himself to a higher standard, and so it's almost like Derek's allowing him to do that, and so he's kind of keeping that in mind with everybody else as well.
That's true, but why does Scott get to do that? Like, is it just like they actually kind of said during the show, they were like, I think Chris Argent said at some point, it's like, you guys are, you know, keeping yourselves, like, held back, and that, you know, Boyd and Cora have got their, like, you know, pedal to the floor. Like, you know, are the guys like, you know, Derek and Isaac at least living kind of more, they're not doing anything more or less bad in their day-to-day lives than Scott is. So I don't understand why Scott is this, like, sanctimonious figure kind of thing in werewolfdom. But, you know, perhaps, again, perhaps there's something, if he's this chosen one that the girl in the first episode said, maybe Derek knows something we don't. Maybe he's like Harry Potter. Maybe everyone in the werewolf world knows his name or something. Like, you know, if that happens, I'm a little, going to be a little put out, but we shall see. Anyway, I basically just liked Derek's masses of culpability issues, which he was severely lacking before.
I agree. And speaking of Derek, my first quote comes from him, too. And this is when Scott and Derek are chasing down Boyd and Cora in the woods. And they're on the phone with each other. And Scott says, you know, I lost Boyd. And Derek just says, that wasn't exactly the plan. And it was his face. He was trying so hard not to be angry, not to be sarcastic, to really hold in everything. And it was just perfect.
Yeah.
Gotta love that face.
Yes. My second one was between Scott and Chris Argent, and this is when Chris has the gun still pointed at Scott, and Scott says, just curious, is there a reason the gun is still pointed at me? And Chris says, well, there's probably still some part of me that wants to shoot you. And then Scott says, I get that. And it was, I mean, I loved Chris's line, but Scott's face and his line when he said that was just hilarious, and I love seeing how grown up and mature Scott is now, and he totally understands, you know, that Chris still doesn't like him, but he's just trying to move past that. It was great.
Yeah. Just to throw back to Derek and to Isaac as well, I want to give a bit of a shout out to, I can't quote the dialogue verbatim, but just the scene, the awkward, like, funny scene in the car where Isaac tries to ask about your sister, and Derek just looks at him and he's like, oh, it's okay, I'll ask later. And then Derek just looks at him again. His face is incredible. It's just, it was a really well done comedy moment in an episode that wasn't really a comedy episode, if you know what I mean. And it was relevant and it didn't feel forced and it was really, really funny. So again, I like that they can make Isaac into this, like, fun, like, he's quite sarcastic and funny, and that he can be used as a comedy foil as well as, you know, a dramatic character.
Yeah, we saw a little bit of that comedy at the end of season 2, and I remember saying, like, I really want to see more funny Isaac moments, because I think he's really great. And one of my favorites was when Scott was like, no, we need real help, and Isaac was just like, what? Like, it was such a dig on him, and not really on purpose, but Isaac's face was just hilarious.
Yeah, I was not an Isaac fan after season 2, like, mid-season 2, I was just, he was driving me crazy. I could not stand him, but towards the end and now in season three, I am loving Isaac. I cannot get enough. He is cracking me up.
Yeah,
every week,
me too.
So.
I'm the same. I hated him in season two. Him and Erica, I was like, you two just need to sit down and just be quiet. And now I loved Erica by the end of season two, and I love Isaac now.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. Yeah.
So I guess that's a perfect segue, right, to jump into our discussion of the episode. And one of the first things we see is that Derek and Scott are actually working together as a team to catch Cora and Boyd. And I think, you know, the whole fandom sort of like finally, after everything they've been through in season one and season two, it's really great seeing them working as a team.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes me wonder, like, how long Scott can sort of get away with being like, but I'm not in your pack. You know, he's not, he's obviously, we don't know that much about pack dynamics in whether like breaking away on purpose means that if the alpha has any sort of psychic control over the betas, whether it doesn't apply to him or something like that. But like at the moment, it does seem like even when they were standing around, like got Isaac and Derek, they seemed like a unit, like, and I don't see why it would be so bad for him to be in this pack. It doesn't mean he has to go and, like, live in a little van, like, with, you know, and sleep on a mattress on the floor in a puppy pile with Derek and Isaac. He can still live at his own house and things. It's fine. I just don't see why he's resisting to the idea of being in Derek's pack so much. Not that it's come up, but, you know, if he's still thinking that way, I don't get why.
Yeah, especially at this point, because I think Derek's really transformed into a much better alpha in season three. Mm. And I think that Scott would benefit from having the strength of having a pack. I mean, they sort of act that way anyway, because they do things together and all of that. But yeah, like you said, I don't really know if it's official or like what the actual dynamics are.
Yeah, I mean, and it just reminds me of, like, those people who are, like, dating or whatever, and they act in every way, like, you know, like your boyfriend, they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, but, you know, she's not my girlfriend, man, like, she's not my girlfriend, and I'm like, yeah, you know, they're trying to pretend it's casual when it's not, if you know what I mean. And I have a friend, basically, who has a relationship like this, who is in a pretty committed relationship, and he knows it, and she knows it, and everyone knows it, but because, for some weird reason, he doesn't want to have official commitment, he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, it's the girl I'm dating, but she's not my girlfriend. Like, they go on holidays together, they pretty much live together, but it's like a joke, if you know what I mean. Like, it's not funny, but, like, at this point, it's like, you're being ridiculous. And I kind of feel like that way about Scott and Derek and the pack. Like, oh, it's not my pack, man. It's not my pack. It is. It is, Scott. Sorry, but it is.
Yeah, the sheer fact that if something happened to Derek or Isaac, Scott would be, like, the first one running around trying to save them. They're a part of your pack, dude. Just deal with it.
Just accept it. It's fine. Yeah. It's not going to make you, you know, more a weaker person or a more vulnerable person. It's fine. I did like the bit with the kids.
Yeah, that was really sweet.
And the fireflies are interesting to me because we don't have them. Like, so that always seemed like a bit of a mythical thing to me, like fireflies. And uh-huh. I've seen them once in my life, and it was in the USA, and it was in a wood, basically, like, and they were green and not yellow, but so fireflies are like a really weird concept to me.
That's hilarious. I live in upstate New York, so like we have tons of fireflies. I mean, I remember going out and catching them as a little kid and stuff too, and just like that it's like this weird mythical creature for you is just kind of hilarious.
Glow, like, what is that? Like, how does that happen? I don't understand.
I'm in the Midwest and we have them all over the place too, all summer long. Like, I grew up catching them in jars just like those two little kids were, so I yeah, that's really cute. It's hilarious. I didn't realize, you know, you don't think about that sort of thing.
Yeah, I know, but yeah, I mean, we have weird stuff, but nothing that glows.
So the next scene here is basically Lydia coming out of her like crazy screaming trance fit thing, and she has like this raging headache, and so she goes to go to the store, but she actually ends up at the swimming pool instead and discovers that dead body. So that's kind of strange.
Presumably it's not the same swimming pool, it's at the school, because this is all, again, this is an episode where everything takes place in one night, And when they were at the school later, it was abandoned, and presumably the crime scene would still be going. So it's a different swimming pool, maybe?
I think it's a public swimming pool, because wasn't the swimming pool in the school actually in the school?
And this yeah, inside the school. Yeah, that's right. I guess, yeah, they can have more than one pool in a town. That's fine. I'll allow it. yeah, it was quite disturbing. I mean, at first I thought like the dummy in the pool was like a trap. Like whatever was going to be there was after her, if you know what I mean. That it was going to be, that they would think that there was a body and then the person would go to it and then the person would get attacked themselves, if you know what I mean. So I don't know what the relevance of the dummy floating in the pool was if it wasn't that, but that was my first thought with the scene.
Yeah, it was kind of random to just have a dummy floating there, but at the same time, I really liked how they sort of tricked you, because it totally looked like a person in the pool, and then she flips it over and she's like, oh my god, are you kidding me? And then of course she looks down and her hands are covered in blood, and I thought it was just a really great way to get you all like full of fear, and then you're relaxed, and then all of a sudden you see the real dead body.
Yeah, fun times. The next scene after that one was the Allison kind of flashback scene. Basically, Allison was very, like, she didn't even, like, I don't think she had any, like, lines out loud in the episode except for in the flashback. And we saw her a lot throughout the episode just, like, doing things her own way, not really, like, contributing to the help, but, like, it's really, like, independently. Like, she's not working as part of the team. She just, like, shows up in the dark of the night and, like, saves the day. Basically, I wrote down, like, she's acting like Batman, and I don't understand why. And it's really, like, confusing to me right now. But basically, she's very isolated, sitting in her car, and she has that flashback about where basically we finally see Scott telling her what happened when her mother died, or when her mother got bitten by Derek. And her asking, why didn't you tell me? He said, I couldn't let that be the last memory you had of her, which is very selfless and all of that, Scott. But, you know, she now knows, I guess, and is dealing with that. We don't really know what she feels about it because she's not talking to anyone. She's just sitting around looking at weapons. In that scene, we also see Derek carrying out Erica's body and looking quite upset. So once again, we don't really know what's happening with Erica and why or how Gage might be coming back, given that we know that she's come to the set for season 3. So what did you think about the whole Allison thing?
I was actually kind of disappointed.
I was a bit as well. I'm not gonna lie. I wanted more of that conversation. I wanted it to be like, I didn't want it to be like a fleeting memory. I wanted that conversation properly.
Exactly. It felt really anticlimactic that it was a flashback. And yeah, I thought it was a really significant conversation that they had. And we really only got like one little exchange with Scott telling her why he didn't tell her that. Mm. And it was just, yeah, I'm kind of sad that they did it in a flashback, but I guess as far as the story goes, it was probably easier just to do it there. And so that kind of explains why Allison is going off on her own like Batman and, you know, saving the day or the I guess.
Yeah,
I completely agree. Like, I really, really, really wanted to see that entire conversation. It seemed like one of those make or break it kind of things. Like, you know, if he can somehow manage to tell her what happened without completely destroying, you know, everything she knew about her mom and her family, then, you know, they might just be able to move on from there. Like, you know, it was like the stepping stone, and we only got like this, you know, little moment of the entire conversation. I was disappointed too. I'm with you.
Yeah, I feel, and I would have liked to see, I don't know how it would have worked, but like Derek was there and I would have liked to see him, like his involvement in the conversation, or if she said anything to him, or if he said anything to her, or, you know, if they mutually apologized or something like that, you know?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, because there's a huge strain on a sort of working relationship between the two of them. I mean, they're not exactly enemies. They're definitely not friends, but they're going to have to work with each other now and again, and they need to sort of clear the air, and we really didn't get any of that in this scene.
Yeah, no, not at all. Oh, well. We can live in hope. We shall see. I mean, it makes me wonder if Chris knows as well, like, because he's working with Derek pretty, not happily, but, you know, civilly, as we see. And obviously he was there when Victoria came back, you know, so I wonder if he knew that, like, he, all the facts about it as well.
Yeah, that's a good question, because that'd be pretty significant for Allison. That would mean that Chris was keeping that a secret, that Allison's mom tried to kill Scott. And, good question. In the next scene, we get this, it starts out sort of funny. We get these two girls camping, and they're about to, well, the one girl is about to have sex for the first time. And so they've got this nice little romantic tent set up and everything. And then these bugs show up, and the one girl completely freaks out and runs away. And the other girl, who, by the way, is Zelda Williams, Robin Williams's daughter, which is awesome. I'm still not over that. I still think that's really cool. Chases after her girlfriend and doesn't end up finding her. And the girl is then taken away by bugs. And let me just tell you, this is like my worst fear. I hate bugs.
Do we think that that's a hallucination, like the bottles? Like that she saw the one bug on the outside of the tent that the other girl, Caitlin is Zelda Williams, and Emily is the one who got taken away by bugs. And the first time Caitlin like knocks a bug off the tent, and then when everything seems to be covered with bugs, the other girl doesn't seem to react to it as much, and Emily is the one that sort of is like, oh, bugs, bugs everywhere, and then, you know, bugs. And before Heather got taken, you know, she, you know, apparently hallucinated all of those bottles, or that they were there and then gone, even if it wasn't a hallucination. And I just felt like the bugs was something similar, like a pattern of whoever's doing this, like, makes them flip out, basically, by doing something like this while they're grabbing them, if you know what I mean.
I definitely think that's a possibility. But at the same time, we have that whole mystery now with the fireflies and not knowing if, like, why those fireflies are in California. So I feel like bugs are significant. But, yeah, it would make sense if it was another hallucination.
The
yeah.
only thing about that that really threw me off was that we saw her, like, disappear into the ground or because of these, like, bugs or whatever. Like, it was just really strange because it wasn't like they consumed her. It was just like all of a sudden she disappeared.
Yeah.
And that is what kind of got me. I was like, you know, with the bottles thing, you know, she got sucked out a window and then Styles comes down and the bottles aren't there. Here, we're seeing all these bugs, blah, 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 and then she disappears and then the bugs scatter and then Caitlin doesn't see anything. So it's like, I was a little unsure, like it seemed like they were trying to throw back to the Heather abduction, but it didn't seem the same either, so it was really, really weird.
Yeah, I mean, either it's a hallucination, or it's really happening, but whatever is doing it also has the ability to make it vanish, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, the stuff that happened to Lydia with Peter wasn't really a hallucination, like it was happening, but it wasn't real, if you know what I mean. It wasn't her own mind imagining it. It was something making her know it. And this could be something similar in that it's something that's really happening but then is removed or whatever by the power that is doing it rather than just her being made to hallucinate, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think the bugs are a clue to what could possibly be going on, but right now there's just not a whole lot to go on to figure it out.
Woo! So I guess the next bit is when, after the bugs happen, Emily encounters Cora and Derek and Isaac and Scott, though, and Caitlin sees the werewolves, basically, because she reports that to the, you know, to the police when they pick her up.
Yeah, and can we talk for a second about how the sheriff definitely is starting to think something.
Yes.
You can see his face.
Yeah, when he was like, when she was like, oh, yeah, girl with claws and glowing eyes and all of that, and, you know, they're like, oh, and the deputy's like, oh, do you believe this? And I think the sheriff, you know how I said I think the sheriff knows everything and just ain't saying anything till someone comes directly to him, until someone is, like, brave enough to come to him and be like, hey, Sheriff, this is what's going on. I still think he secretly knows everything. And I've seen a few other people talking about that concept as well. So clearly it's becoming a bit of an idea. And this is another clue to that, potentially, That or he's going to work it out, basically.
Yeah, I was a little hesitant when you brought it up at first, but I'm much more on board now because you, like he says, she clearly saw something. And then the other officer says, you mean someone. And it's like, I don't know if he can put a name to it. I don't know if he knows exactly what's going on, but he knows something really weird is happening in Beacon Hills.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who else thought it was kind of cheap that this girl said they both had taken like a half a tab of ecstasy too?
Yeah.
And then come to find, like, she was talking about making this night special for this girl, and then we find out they're on drugs. I was like, it's a little cheap.
I feel like I wouldn't be lighting that many candles. Like, whatever.
Right. Exactly. I was like, it just seems a little bit of like a throwaway, like they needed a reason that this girl wouldn't be credible, and so why not? They took drugs. Sure, that works. It just seemed a little bit strange.
But basically, yeah, after Scott and, you know, Derek and Isaac try to, you know, defend this girl from Cora or chase her off, they basically decide that they need, because they had such trouble with Cora, they then get told basically by Stiles that, you know, that he's got the dead body and that they assume it's Boyd and Cora. And so Derek is like very, you know, hesitant to believe that they've killed someone. But like the fact that of the matter is that they think that Boyd and Cora have done this murder, and that Scott basically suggests that they need to get help finding them, tracking them, and capturing them, and basically suggests getting help from someone who knows how to do that, which is Chris Argent. So they go to him to ask for help. And Scott, basically, him and Scott have a bit of a back and forth, as we've quoted some of it. He kind of says, no, I'm not going to be involved in that world anymore. And then Scott kind of very subtly manipulates him by being like, oh, fine, can you do me one favor? Can you give me a lift, like, somewhere? And basically directs him to where the crime scene is of the murder and makes Chris look at it, and then Chris agrees to help them. So what do you think about that whole thing?
Does anyone else think it was a little presumptuous of Scott to just assume it was Boyd or Cora? Like, they've got all of these alphas running around and all of this other stuff that's happened in the past, and he just assumes that it's these two that they're chasing so far away from where the pool is.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I know that it's on their mind because they know that they're so bloodthirsty or whatever, but it doesn't seem to make sense. And, on one hand, Derek's like, I don't understand how they could have got there so fast. But, you know, it could also be seen in Derek as like, oh, denial, like he doesn't want to have to admit that they've done something that bad. So it is very confusing. I guess if you're in that situation and you would make that leap, but it was not really feasible. So I don't think Derek saying, oh, it couldn't have been them was set out of logic either. Like, he was not being logical, even though he was correct. And Scott was not being logical, even though he was incorrect. They were both sort of speaking out of emotion, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I really liked Chris in this part, too. And I think it's kind of funny that both Chris and Allison have agreed not to have anything to do with the supernatural, to hang up their hunting gear. And now they're both doing it sort of separately from each other behind their backs. And I kind of hope this goes on for a little bit more in the season where they're both, you know, trying to hide it from each other, but really they're doing the same thing.
And it'll be one of those moments where they, like, end up coming face-to-face with each other and, like, oh, you know, kind of in a either humorous or dramatic manner.
Allison, like, rolls into the scene, like, oh, hi, Dad. how you doing? Oh, man, that'd be great.
Yeah, it'd be the, you weren't meant to be here. No, you weren't meant to be here kind of thing. But it's nice that they're both on the right side, I guess. This scene was really well done, both with Scott's interactions with Chris and, as I mentioned before, like, Derek and Isaac watching in the car. And one other little bit I liked as well was when Chris was kind of like, why should I care about these people? You know, Cora, why should I care about Derek's sister? And I don't even know this Boyd kid. Didn't even know his last name. And Scott's like, Boyd is his last name. And he's like, oh, what's his first name? And he's like, Vernon. And he's like, oh. Which is a nice little confirmation thing for the fandom, I think, as well. Because did you guys know that that was Boyd's name?
I did, but, like, it's only because I've seen it around, but I don't know where that first came from.
Yeah, I think a while ago it was on, like, they had, like, Facebook profiles, like, or something for, like, or like some Teen Wolf website, they had like character profiles and the details were in that. And it was like, oh yeah, so and so name, and like they had their dates of birth and like favorite bands and stuff like this. And it was done like by MTV. But
For the game, I think it was a Facebook
maybe,
game.
Maybe. I knew that as well, like that was his name, but then I know there's people floating around the fandom that don't, that Boyd was his first name, or that they've called him something else in a fan fiction or something like that. Like, and so that's an interesting little like confirmation of canon kind of thing. Obviously the original canon came from somewhere that wasn't really seen very much, but if I was called Vernon, I would call myself Boyd as well.
I liked Chris's reaction to that. He was like, that's not a very good name. That was so funny.
Yeah.
I also loved the way Scott said Vernon. Like, yeah. Duh, Vernon. You should know that. Like, what's wrong with you?
Oh, good times. When he agrees, basically, when he agrees to help Derek and stuff, and he's having sort of the first conversation with Derek about Cora, and he says, oh, when did you last see your sister? I can't remember exactly what he said, but he was either like, 9 years ago, I thought she died in the fire, or before the fire, 9 years ago, or something like that. And this is very weird because I don't know if they've just made something up, like if they've just decided to change their canon, or if there's something weird going on, like if like that he saw her 3 years before the fire. Because in season one and two, there've been, you know, everything with Kate's the investigation about Kate and Harris and everything like that. It wasn't just like something out of the novel. It wasn't just something fandom made up. They've been saying for two seasons that the fire happened 6 years ago. That'd probably be about 7 years ago now, not nine. And Derek said that the last time he saw Cora was 9 years ago.
I actually think he said not in years, which kind of slurred together sounds like 9 years because...
Oh, I hope you're right. Yeah. I can't stand it if they're going to be... I was like, oh, is there a conspiracy here? Are they messing with canon? Or, you know, is it, you know, is something weird going on? Because I'm going to have to look at that again because... I've seen people as well being like, what, 9 years? I'm really hoping that you're correct, basically.
Yeah, it definitely sounded like 9 years at first, and I didn't even think about it until I saw things on Twitter. And then I saw some people saying, oh, no, I think he said not in years. And I went back and listened, and it's kind of hard to pick up. It still kind of sounds like nine, but if you listen closely, it does sound like he's saying not in years. I don't think they'd make a big mistake like that.
I mean, the only thing I can think of that would have been is because they wanted to potentially, like, age Derek up a bit because they were, you know, if he was 16 or 17 when the fire happened and it was 6 years ago, he's only, like, 22 now. But if it was 9 years ago, he's, like, 25 now, which is, I think, more the age they were intending to make him. So I don't think that they would just mess with that. Like, I don't think that if they've made a confirmation and they've got like, you know, newspaper articles saying, you know, woman investigated over fire 6 years ago, and like they've made it canon that it was 6 years ago. I don't think they can just change it.
Yeah, I don't think that's something that Jeff Davis would do either. Like, he's pretty good about staying consistent. I think you're probably right, Karen.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm gonna have to investigate that, and I need to know. Next time Jeff does Tumblr, we'll have to bug him because I need to know.
So jumping into the next scene here, we've got Lydia and Styles talking in her bedroom, and there was kind of a really funny, cute scene between them. But she basically says she doesn't know how she knew where the body was. And she comes to the conclusion, they both sort of come to the conclusion at the same time, that the last time this happened, it had to do with Peter. And so we have a couple of theories here. I think one of the main ones is the Banshee theory that she could, and we talked about this a little bit before, I think, that she could possibly be a Banshee, that they tend to scream or wail right before there's a death. And I think right now, unless I'm mistaken, this is probably the most popular theory.
Yeah, there's just something about that that has never quite sat well with me. Because the whole Banshee thing, like, they're supposed to be spirits, not necessarily, like, people, or at least every incarnation I've ever seen of a Banshee has been, like, some sort of...
Because I don't understand how she could be one and not know, like, if you know what I mean? Like, that, you know, it would just be... That doesn't really make that much sense to me, but...
Plus, aren't they supposed to have some sort of, like, Irish background, like, to them? And we haven't really heard much about, like, Lydia's background, but...
She is
for some
a
reason I never... Yeah, I never really put it together as Irish, but that could be.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, it could be I feel like it could be a few different options, but I don't know enough about banshees to know. I mean, they could make up their own version of any myth, pretty much. So we will have to see. But I don't know what her deal is, basically. So yes, I can't even begin to tap into that one.
So I sort of, and I'm sure this is not an original theory, I'm sure plenty of other people have come up with it, but I was sort of thinking it's a possibility that she could be a necromancer. And so I did a little digging, and I'm thinking maybe this could be a possibility. Just some things I pulled from Wikipedia says that necromancy is a form of magic involving communication with the deceased, either by summoning their spirit or raising them from the dead. It's for the purpose of divination and telling the future and discovering hidden knowledge. And it also says in here that classical necromancers address the dead in a mixture of high-pitched squeaking and low droning, comparable to the trance state mutterings of shamans. And this kind of stuck out to me because we have high-pitched squeaking, Lydia screaming, that's a possibility, and also the fact that it's a trance state sort of like mutterings here is that she is in that fugue state a couple of times and doesn't know what's going on.
When I saw all of this in the doc, it just kind of like clicked something. I think this is the mystery of Lydia. I think that she does have some sort of necromancy powers and is somehow connected to, you know, the dead. And it's really, it definitely throws a wrench into everything around there, because nobody that they kill is, you know, they could potentially not stay dead, which could maybe give us an answer to the Erica issue.
Yeah.
That Erica's dead, and yet we see her. Like, this could kind of maybe solve that problem. But yeah, no, I'm definitely on the Lydia as a necromancer train now. I'm totally running with you.
My big thing is, like, how could you be that and not know? Like, is it something that, like, was she made into one? Or, like, you know, like, what the, you know, she obviously brought Peter back in some way, but, you know, we thought that was Peter sort of having his, you know, a bit like a Horcrux, like his part of him's consciousness was having the control there. Maybe it's like leftover from that. Maybe she was totally normal before he made her into that, and now it's sort of there. But I would like to know about Lydia quite soon. Thank you.
Me too. And I really like this necromancer theory too, because it does fit with the things that I said, and like they say in here, like there's will manipulation and illusions, and you can possibly, they used to do this to find out about like identifying criminals or finding items or revealing future events. And we already think that the girl played by Megan Tandy could possibly be a psychic, so that kind of fits in here. And they also say that sacrifice is usually the payment for summoning a spirit or a demon. So that would kind of fit in with the story. And I also just really, really want Matt back. So
I think out of everyone they're going to bring back, like, oh, this person shouldn't have died, you think they're going to bring back Matt?
No.
Really?
But I want him back, okay? I need him.
Wow. Yeah, aww. No, I would like him. I would like him back. And I think he would be a really interesting, he could have had an interesting development kind of thing. Because I think this is a show that's not afraid to potentially make, like, heroes out of villains. Like, if not many shows do that. Like, I think that, like, Vampire Diaries has a little bit with Klaus, kind of, like, and not that I know that much about it, but I know that that's sort of a thing. Buffy, obviously.
And Damon, too.
But he was a protagonist to start with, right? Like, it's like,
yeah,
the
but
the show was about him. It was, he wasn't ever going to be like the fully like bad guy, was he? Or,
yeah.
But like Spike in Buffy, who was originally a proper antagonist and then went antagonist to anti-hero to like protagonist hero. And I think Teen Wolf would be a show that's not afraid to take a villain and make them into an anti-hero and then a hero. So we haven't seen that fully happen yet. I mean, Derek's not a villain, you know. We've seen him become a bit more positive than he was, but he's definitely not a villain. But I think Teen Wolf is a show that where that kind of arc could work, so it would be interesting to see what kind of characters they could do that with.
Yeah, and I think that sort of segues into the next scene where Peter sort of emerges from the shadows, and he tells Derek that Derek's not a hero, Peter's not a hero, that they live in shades of gray, whereas Scott is very much a black and white sort of person, and he's the hero of the story. And I was sort of wondering what you guys thought of this. Do you think that Derek lives in shades of gray, or do you think he is a hero?
No, not at all. I don't think Derek. I think his inner thoughts. No, I don't think that he lives in shades of gray at all. I think that he is. I think that his ideas of what I think Styles lives in shades of gray. I think, other characters might, but I think Derek has a pretty strong idea of like what we do and what we don't do and what's right and what's wrong, but that it just might fall in a different place to where his ideas of what's right and wrong might be different to what Scott's ideas of right and wrong are, but it doesn't stop the fact that he does have that divisiveness, if you know what I mean.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Him and Scott don't see black and white the same way, but I wouldn't say that either one of them ever sees anything in shades of gray.
Yeah.
Peter definitely is a shades of gray kind of person.
Totally. Yeah, I feel like, they aren't necessarily seeing what's black in the same way and what's white in the same way, but they both are that divisive is the only word I can think of it. Like, you know, Derek saying, no, we don't do this, or yes, we do this. He doesn't have like a shaky moral code. Like he has trouble making decisions and things, but he's pretty strong in his own ideas of right and wrong, whether they're the same as other people's or not, you know, we don't know. But you know how we were talking quite a long time ago about like Styles being like a potentially being like that concept of like the poison friend, like the foil to the hero that can do the bad stuff, that because the hero does see in black and white. I think Styles definitely lives in shades of gray, so that would be you know, he's very empathetic, like obviously he believes in right, and I'm not saying he believes in wrong, but I do think his moral code of what's okay or what's an acceptable way to get a means to an end is pretty shades of gray.
Which we definitely saw last season with the whole, like, his dad and the Jack Daniels
drinking
at the table.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Like, I mean, we've seen a lot of instances of Styles, you know, just kind of crossing, tiptoeing across the line, making sure that, you know, he doesn't go too far, but, you know, he'll get done what needs to be done, too.
Yeah, I agree.
And I wonder if more of that's going to be coming up this season with the Alpha Pack, because I have a feeling Deucalion's really going to be manipulating as many people as he can. And not that I think Styles is necessarily going to fall for that, but I think Styles might be more willing to do what needs to be done to stop the Alpha Pack. So that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, the comparable thing is like, I think that when we were talking about that whole concept originally was in Buffy, like the whole thing where in season 5 where Giles kills Ben in Ben's human form so that he can kill Glory because he knows Buffy won't or can't do it, if you know what I mean. And I feel like that kind of thing is potentially comparable to what Styles might be capable of, just, you know, that Scott isn't.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of Styles, in the next scene, we see him realize that Boyd and Cora didn't kill the boy at the pool. Melissa shows him the body, and we see that they've been strangled, his throat is sliced, and he has this wound on his head. And so,
like a blunt trauma.
Yeah, and a werewolf wouldn't do all that. They would literally just, like, rip him to shreds. So he realizes that something else is going on. And then Melissa uncovers the other body, which she says has the exact same wounds, and it ends up being Heather. And my question to you guys is, did you expect it to be Heather, or did that surprise you?
I did. I thought it was going to either be her or the girl from the woods, but I thought that the girl might come up later. I expected it to be Heather, but I was also like, if she's been found, how come Styles' dad hasn't told Styles or whatever, or that, you know, there's been no update on her case given to Styles at this point. Like, maybe his dad knew that she'd been found but didn't know how to tell Styles yet or something. But so I was expecting it, but I was like, hang on, if it was her, shouldn't it be known that she's been found?
Yeah, I thought it could have been her, but I ran through all of the other girls in my head, too. Like, it could be, you know, the girl that we saw Deucalion, like, slice at the end of the first episode, and it could be, like, I'm running through my head of all the people it could have been, and Heather seemed the most plausible, so I wasn't surprised when it was her.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. It was just me then, because I, for some reason, I really didn't see it coming. I think I was so stuck on Emily, the girl from the woods, that I was just really certain that was her. When they uncovered her, I was like, wait, who is this? And then I saw Styles' face, and I was like, oh, God, it is Heather. So I don't want to say it was a twist. It was a little shocking for me, and it definitely made, like, an impact to see his face like that.
Yeah, he was... His feelings were quite sad. He was very clearly very affected, and it was quite sad. I found it interesting that Melissa didn't know like who she was. Like, is she a missing person? Like, I don't. All of it kind of made me a bit confused. Like, did she have a identification yet in the hospital? You know, like, did she have a, you know, anything like that? Because I don't know how long Melissa's known Styles and Styles' family. And I know this girl didn't go to Beacon Hills, but like, if the McCalls and the Stilinskys knew each other for a while, you know, potentially she would know that he had, you know, that this girl is a family friend. It makes me think that she wasn't yet identified, like that she'd only been found and that she hadn't actually been identified yet.
I think that's a possibility. At the same time, Melissa's just a nurse, so she doesn't exactly work in the morgue, so I'm wondering if, you know, she didn't really know a whole lot of what was going on and just sort of happened to look at the bodies and knew a little bit from her training what had happened and was sort of going off of that.
I was a little confused as to why she would have seen those two and thought, I need to call Styles because this isn't a werewolf attack. Like, Styles thought immediately, you know, oh, werewolf attack, you know, I gotta go help Lydia, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's what was going through his head. But I couldn't figure out what about these two would make her call Styles thinking it was supernatural.
She was, I guess he was there with the body, like the boy, he was there with... a part of that crime scene, and then maybe he asked her to check it.
Yeah,
to see what happened or something like that, you know, because he obviously knew about the boy coming in because he went to get Lydia, but I don't know exactly, like, if she did it of her own volition or if he'd asked her to look it over.
Right, like, it doesn't really matter, but it was one of those little things that I was like, how would she know that?
I think, too, the fact that they had identical wounds was sort of like a red flag, so that might have been why she called him, too.
Yeah.
True.
I know we sort of touched on this a little bit, but do you guys have any theories about the fireflies and the fact that they're clearly not the type that are native?
I don't know anything about fireflies, so I don't have an answer to that question.
I was running through things in my head trying to come up with a really great theory as to why these fireflies are showing up all of a sudden. And I couldn't come up with anything, like, specific. You know, I ran through, like, could they have possibly been something that follows the alphas around? Like, I have no idea where they're technically from. Like, if the alphas came from somewhere else in California or if they're from, you know, somewhere else in the United States. Like, maybe it's something having to do with them. But then I was like, that doesn't really make all that much sense. And why would that be tied into... like the sacrifices and this girl, you know, there's a lot of different bugs in this episode. And you kind of think that, you know, if there's one bug, they've got to be kind of related. So I couldn't come up with anything specific.
Maybe they're little spies. I don't know. Maybe they're not like real. I mean, not real, not like everyone's hallucinating them, but maybe they're like tiny little like mechanical spies. I don't know. I'm making things up at this point. I don't know. I've got nothing on that.
The only thing that I kept thinking of was the movie Constantine. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but there's one of the, like, demons in that movie is literally made of bugs and, like...
Ooh.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie?
No.
Oh, it's really good. You should watch it. Have you seen
it? Is that Paul Bettany in there? Who is in it?
Keanu Reeves.
Okay, I don't know why I thought it was Paul Bettany.
Yeah, I saw it once a while ago, so I don't remember all of it, but I do remember the bug guy.
Yeah, so I just kind of keep thinking, like, is this a demon? Is this some sort of, like, ancient god or something like that that has control over bugs or, like, a fertility god or something? I don't know, but that's, like, the only theory I could come up with.
Good times.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of bugs, so, yeah, this is kind of creeping me out already.
Yeah, when you research bugs, you end up seeing pictures, and I don't want to, so yeah.
I'm with you there. No. Anyway, moving on from that swiftly. Aside from the bugs, the whole end part of the episode is about them pushing Cora and Boyd into the school to trap them with Chris's help of, you know, his, you know, sonic screwdrivers or whatever the hell those things were in the ground emitting, you know, the sound. And that all works until they get there, and instead of them herding straight into the school, they end up going over it, and someone's like, oh, someone's got to go around the back and send them back, and Chris is going to go, and then Isaac's like, no, I'll go, I'm faster. And when he does go around there, you know, something starts herding them back, like something starts hitting them and herding them back, and he looks around, and it's Allison on top of the school bus, you know, being Batman, and, like, you know, helping. She wasn't ever part of the plan. Like, how did she know to show up there? Like, what is she, does she just patrol the streets at night now? Like, I don't understand. But my big thing here is, did you catch the way that they looked at each other?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And obviously in the trailer for next week, you see they've made it a lot more obvious. But in this week, I was like, I was just like, oh, I caught that. That is the start of something, which is really weird to me. Like, I just don't understand. Like, I get, like, why she would want some time from Scott, but their whole thing is so intense that I can't imagine her just being interested in another werewolf, if you know what I mean. Like, or in another person, let alone another werewolf who's not as potentially morally good as Scott. So I have no idea how this whole thing's going to work, why they've decided that this is a plot line. Like, is it just because they're dating in real life? Like, because they felt that the chemistry would work really well? Like, I don't understand why this is going to be a thing. But the way they looked at each other was really unmissable. I was just like, wow, that was a whole... And I wonder if it's going to be, like, a secret thing in the show. Like, if she's going around not talking to anyone, being, like, this sort of creature of the night, if she's going to just, like, sneak in and hook up with him and leave without saying a word, and it's going to be like this crazy secret thing.
Jeez, I don't know.
But Scott would smell it. Scott would smell it on Isaac, for
That's
sure.
That's true.
Yeah. Just have silent Allison for the next, like, three episodes where she doesn't actually say anything. She just kind of pops in and does her thing and leaves.
Weird. It was so weird.
It was weird, but she was so awesome in this episode, and I just really like seeing her in hunting mode. I think she's, like, completely badass.
Yeah.
I loved her being proactive. Like, she did all of that on her own. She had no idea what the boys were doing. And she just kind of, like, jumped in full throttle and was like, I'm going to help. Like, you know, screw them. I don't need any of them. I'm going to do this. Like, I loved that she just kind of felt propelled to help and do her own thing.
Yeah, I just don't understand how she knew what was needed, if you know what I mean. Had she been following them around? Like, maybe she knew what her dad was up to, like, secretly or something.
That's what I'm thinking, because she's obviously been trained, and I think she's probably gotten even more training over the summer. I don't know, because she seems a lot far ahead than she was at the end of season two. But I'm thinking maybe she just sort of innately knew what her dad would want and realized what he was doing and said, okay, the next logical thing would be to trap them in the school.
I don't know. Maybe, yeah, I need to know. Like, I mean, Teen Wolf has done a thing before where someone had more information that they knew about than the audience knew about, like, with Scott and Gerard's whole, like, secret deal that we didn't know about. And so I'm wondering if she is getting information somewhere and that it's not just some, like, weird coincidence.
Definitely a possibility. So at the peak of this scene, we see Derek running into the boiler room because he realizes that Miss Blake is in there. And so he sort of knocks Cora and Boyd out and then ends up saving Miss Blake. And so what did you guys think of this scene, and particularly Miss Blake's interaction with Derek?
First of all, I was like, how did he do that? Because what we see him going in, and Cora and Boyd got both going at him, literally like he's going to die, like ripping out his guts, basically. They're both, like, one after the other, just kept slashing and slashing and slashing at his chest. And he's like, you see him sort of failing. And then when Scott comes in, you see him very weary but kind of recovered, and Boyd and Cora kind of knocked out on the floor. And we don't see how he did that, if you know what I mean. We don't see how he got from him being the one slashed up to, like, turning around and defeating them. So that's my first thing.
Yeah, that was confusing to me too, but I sort of have to wonder if it has to do with the sun coming up and then they sort of just lost all their juice and he was able to, like, knock them out or something.
Yeah, potentially. But yeah, he also had a lot to heal from, so I'm not surprised he was so worn out. And I had no idea how the Derek and Miss Blake interaction was going to be. I had no idea how I was going to feel about it. But when he came in and he was all like weary and heroic, and she kind of looked at him, I liked it. Like, I don't know, it was. I kind of liked it.
I couldn't help but think, this poor lady who's just seen all of this crazy go on that she has no idea what it is, and rather than letting Scott or Isaac, who both are dressed normally and look normal, help her, they send Derek, who looks like he just went through war, whose t-shirt is ripped up and he's all scratched and bloody, and like, oh, let's let him take care of her. It'll be fine.
Yeah. But it was all for that line, so he could say, there's a teacher, I'll take care of her.
I don't know why he wanted to. Maybe he knew that he liked her from her faraway scent or something already.
I also loved the shock that their plan worked. Mm-hmm. Like, when they're both sitting there, they're like, did that just work? Like, oh my god.
Yeah.
That part too.
Yeah. Yeah, that bit actually, the whole, did that plan work? Even though they then realized it didn't because she was in there. I really liked the way that... just when they were waiting to go in, I really liked the way that they were interacting with each other there. They were really... Ooh, good point. Okay, sorry. The whole thing about Boyd and Cora holding them back and then him tearing into him, I've just seen somewhere being like, he held them in place so they focus on him and leave the human alone. Like, did you guys get that? Like, I thought they were just beating him. I didn't think that he was doing it as a diversion tactic.
Oh.
This is saying that they let them attack him.
I kind of thought something along those lines, but I just assumed that, you know, like, he was just glad that it was working out that way. Like, didn't necessarily think it was a plan, like, he was trying to save, you know, like, trying to draw their attention. It just kind of worked out.
Yeah, yeah.
But that is cool, though.
And then I guess the last bit was when they discover the third body, and Stiles puts together this whole idea about it being like a virgin sacrifice thing, because he knew Heather was a virgin, and the other guy had like a purity ring, so presumably he was like a virgin as well. He knew from the story of the two girls that Emily was a virgin as well, and that he instantly is like, human sacrifice. And I probably would have gone to like serial killer, like sacrifice, but he's in the supernatural business, so I get why he'd go there instead of serial killer. But
yeah. It's interesting because he mentions a threefold death, and I looked this up to get a little more information on it, and it's pretty interesting, and I think it fits into the story pretty well. It basically says that a threefold death is when one person dies simultaneously in three different ways. And they mention that he dies by hanging or strangulation, falling from a tree, by drowning, and by wounding. And these three deaths are foretold, and they're usually a punishment for some sort of offense for something. And then they were talking about like the Norse god Odin is also associated with a threefold death, and that human sacrifices to Odin were hanged from trees, that it could be sacrifices to other gods. There's one line in here that I found really interesting because it says, in response to the sacrifices to gods, that, and I'm totally going to murder these names, but Taranis was propitiated by burning, to Tatis by drowning, and Essus by means of suspending his victims from trees and ritually wounding them.
And you're going to say something about the themes of the three seasons.
Well, yeah, because we have Derek's family burning, we have Matt drowning, and we have these victims now hanging from the trees. Like, I just have a really hard time thinking that that's a coincidence.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder if Gerard is behind everything, because we know that Kate burnt down the house. Could it have been on Gerard's word? Like, has he been planning something like this from, I mean, like, you know, 6 years ago or more?
Yeah, probably. He's evil enough.
Yeah, clearly.
And, of course, like, with all the deaths are supposed to be foretold, and maybe that could still be related to Lydia's screams, because she does tend to scream right before, you know, somebody dies.
Yeah, no, the only thing that kind of, you know, made me start thinking was in most stories when they talk about, like, ritualistic deaths or whatever, they usually happen in, like, threes or sevens. And so when we had these three, I thought if this is the end, then that could, you know, like, that could really be the start of something, you know, whatever. But then I found out, you know, in the preview that we have another one next week. So that makes me think that we've got at least three more deaths after the one from next week.
Excellent news. That's really good. I like this.
Yeah. Like, for some reason, I mean, they may not follow that model, but most do. They either do a 3 or a 7, so I'm kind of wondering if we just have a lot more death coming.
So do you think that it could possibly be a sacrifice to a god or a demon or something? Do you think we'll be seeing a little bit more mythology like that?
We haven't really seen anything so far that does use the ideas of deities or even demons. Like, we've seen that different things can do, you know, exist, like werewolves and cannibals and stuff, but we haven't seen that they, you know, that any of these are like demons, you know, from a hell dimension, or that they believe in any sort of gods. They all seem to be organic things. And so I'm wondering if it's more, you know, a ritual to do something like raise someone from the dead or like, you know, something like that.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. And we have a piece of feedback actually that talks a little bit more about that, that I think kind of lends credibility to that theory.
Mm.
Did you guys have anything else about this episode?
Oh, I just need Peter to lose the mustache. That was all.
Yeah. And Isaac can wear as many scarves as he wants.
Oh my god, yes. He's so cute. I'm really loving him. I really didn't like him, and now I really like him.
He just sort of like smolders every time he looks at people.
He's,
and I'm
so
just like
handsome.
Oh, yeah.
He's really good looking, and it's just a joke. I always thought Colton was very good looking. Styles is cute in his own way. Derek is a bit much for me, his whole muscles and scruff thing. I always thought Matt was quite cute as well, and young Peter as well. And so Isaac is just fulfilling my pretty right now as well, so that's good.
I know that Chaos Rising, Natalie and I thought that was an absolutely excellent episode, definitely one of our favorites out of all of Teen Wolf. And how do you guys think Fireflies lived up to that?
It was good. Like, it wasn't as good as Chaos Rising, but I think Chaos Rising is one of the best episodes of any TV show I've ever seen. So it's not like I'm saying this is bad. It's just this is like a normal good Teen Wolf episode as opposed to like a lackluster episode, whereas Chaos Rising was, I found, extraordinary.
Yeah, I think Fireflies puts a lot of things into motion that we really needed to kind of see progress, with Styles kind of starting to put things together and, you know, finally wrapping up Boyd and Cora's like craziness and all of that from Chaos Rising. Like, there's things moving forward now that we've been kind of waiting to see move forward, and we're finally getting bits of Lydia. So I really love the episode for what it gave us. It's not necessarily like my favorite or one of the best, but it's really great, and it's moving things that I'm totally ready to see.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I agree with that. I saw a lot of people saying that this was sort of like a filler episode, and I guess that is kind of right, because it does establish a lot of things and we don't get a whole lot of plot moving forward, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, and in terms of the story, I think it works out pretty well, actually.
Yeah, I don't think it's filler in like, we had to write an episode, we didn't have anything to write it about, but I think it's like, yeah, an episode to drive the plot along, rather than like, you know, to reveal information, exposition and stuff like that, rather than like a story in its own right.
Right, and there are, you know, there's always episodes that have big events and things that you're looking forward to, or, you know, unexpected things like a conversation between two characters you didn't see coming. And while this didn't really have anything huge or groundbreaking, it does, you know, it has its own place, and it is, I think it's going to be really necessary to the rest of it.
Yeah.
Okay, then, jumping right into our feedback to wrap this episode up, we have one from Jesse, and they left this comment on Hypeable, and it was pretty big, so I'm sort of just summarizing it, but I definitely wanted to mention it. And they say that Peter used Lydia to resurrect himself, and Jesse thinks that she's connected to him in a way, and that's the reason she found the body. Jesse thinks Peter is trying to make the kids appear as if they were killed by humans, and why is he sacrificing virgins? Jesse thinks he's trying to resurrect his family, and Jesse references the hands in the credit sequence, the intro sequence. So what do you guys think about this, that Peter could be behind it all?
On one hand, I'm like, I want to be like, oh, Peter's not up to anything. But on one hand, I also feel like we haven't seen enough of him. Like, I feel like if he was just like a comedy foil, he would be around being snarky the whole time, if you know what I mean. But I feel like the fact that we haven't seen that much of him might mean that he is actually up, like, has his own plot going on. So, potentially.
Yeah, I want to believe that all of this is either a Gerard thing or it's some other evil being that has nothing to do with Peter, but it could very well have some sort of tie to him, because I agree. He's been in the background doing things and we haven't seen him, so yeah, it could be him.
Yeah, I definitely don't trust Peter. I don't know if he's behind it all. I think this is a really interesting theory, and I wouldn't mind seeing it play out, but at this point, I'm definitely sort of on the it's all Gerard's doing bandwagon.
Yeah, I just don't want it to be Peter.
Yeah.
So we have another one from the username Josh Holm. I'm not sure, or Joss Holm, I'm not sure how that said. But he said, or she said, remember the Deucalion voiceover in a preview for season 3? I think the human sacrifices have to do with the demon wolf. I think the alphas are doing the murders to make Deucalion like some sort of ultimate werewolf, or to introduce season 3B, like the second half of season 3's villain. I don't know. I mean, I think that the alphas are very crafty. So, this whole thing doesn't look like werewolf murders. And that's true. So it wasn't Boyd and Cora, like they weren't like thoughtlessly killing. But a werewolf could still kill a person like a human could kill a person. They don't have to rip their throat out, you know. So it could potentially be this.
Yeah, I think this is interesting. I still don't really think that the alphas are behind it, but I kind of like this theory of, like, trying to make Deucalion in some sort of ultimate werewolf. I think that could be really potentially scary and cool.
I'm also still a bit stuck on, like, the whole thing that Jeff said, though we don't know if he's lying, that he wouldn't do, like, two mysteries or two villains, like, that everything would be tied into the same kind of story. So, it makes me wonder, you know, if it's not the alphas, if the alphas aren't the actual villain. If the alphas are kind of like, you know how, like, Peter wasn't the actual villain and it was like, you know, or, like, Kate was more of the villain and it was like, and then Gerard and stuff like that. And, like, Jackson wasn't the villain and Gerard was the villain. Maybe the alphas aren't, like, the ultimate villain of this, even if the story is tied together, but they are not the ultimate villain of the season. That they're just kind of, they're just out for their own. They want Derek in the pack. They're not, like, hardcore, you know, doing a bunch of murders at the moment. They're just sort of ruthless and living in their own world. So we don't know if they're the ultimate villains yet or not.
Yeah, it almost seems too easy that the alphas are, like, the big bad, because we already know of them. We've seen almost all of them, if not all of them. So it almost would just be way too easy to say, oh, okay, they're, you know, they're who we're going to be battling for, you know, a season and a half or something. Whereas, you know, setting it up to make it seem like they are and then getting into, you know, some ultimate thing that we didn't see coming, that's so much more Teen Wolf to me.
Yeah,
definitely. And, I mean, maybe we're thinking of this backwards because for a while, everyone was like, okay, you know, could the alphas be kidnapping Heather? Like, could the alphas be controlling something else that has to do with this? Maybe something is controlling the alphas. You know, like you guys were saying, maybe they're not the big bad. Maybe something else is. And these guys are just puppets.
Like, out of all the alphas in the world, why do they want Derek?
Or, well, Scott, right?
Well, you know, they want Derek in their pack. I think they want to kill Scott potentially, but they at the moment, at least Peter seems to be leading Derek to believe that they want Derek to be part of the Alpha Pack.
Yeah, I wonder if it has something to do with being a born werewolf. Do you think that gives you like extra powers or something?
Potentially. I mean, I'm curious as to how big the werewolf community is. Like, if there's like, you know, people in every town, if they're pretty, you know, or if a new alpha existing is like there's only like 5 of them in the USA, or like, you know, how many there are, if you know what I mean, how common it is. Okay, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about on this week at all?
I don't think so.
No, I think I'm good too.
I mean, did you guys watch the trailer? I mean, it was attached to the end of the episode, so I saw a bit The Alphas weren't in this episode at all this week. Next week seems to have a bit of more about Deucalion and the twins, so I'm quite excited for the twins. Yeah. I basically want to know how that's all going to go down.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, most definitely, yeah.
Cool. Okay, well, if everyone has finished with this episode, we can say bye-bye, I suppose.
Did you have fun, Kristen?
I had a lot of fun. Thanks for having me, guys. I love talking Teen Wolf.
You're welcome. What's your Twitter? Do you have a public Twitter for Hyperville followers?
Yes, it's Kranzie85, KRANZIE85.
Cool. So, yeah, you can talk to Kristen about the episode as well or do the other shows. You guys are on the Firefly rewatchable together, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Cool. And is the next one you're doing Veronica Mars?
Yes.
Because I have not seen Veronica Mars. I've seen Firefly, but I've never seen Veronica Mars. So, yeah, that should be cool. If you don't know about Rewatchable, it's a show that Hyperball has started where they take completed series and do a podcast with a couple of people who know the show well and people who have never seen it, and they go through and do a review the same way that we do with Teen Wolf, but with past shows that have been fully completed, really popular shows that, you know how some people have just never seen something, like I've never seen Lost. So, yeah, that's cool. It's a cool show. We like it. Yay. Anyone else got anything they want to talk about before we leave? I could tell you about Darren in Paris. That was fun.
Oh, I saw him in Ann Arbor, so...
Still listen up. Did you go to the secret show?
No, because I live like an hour south of Ann Arbor. So my friend and I, like, you know, I had a VIP, so like I got to meet him and take a picture.
I saw your picture. It's so good.
I didn't see your picture. I want to see your picture. I'll show you mine.
Are we not Facebook friends?
I've been really bad at Facebook, like since I've been over here though, like it's really hard to load things. So maybe it's on there and I didn't see. But yeah, have you been to Ann Arbor before? Like, I don't know.
Yes,
like, yeah.
I went up to see the space tour up there.
It's such a nice town. It's like one of the nicest places I've ever been. Like the vibe there, I love Ann Arbor. It's the best. Yeah, I just saw him in Paris to see they did a movie premiere of the movie he did with Kristen Wiig. And then the night before that happened, he decided to add a gig as well. And I went to the concert and the movie. So that was cool. And it was nice to see him again. And the gig was fun. And Paris is nice. And it was all very cool.
Yeah, his show in Ann Arbor was absolutely fantastic.
Like, yeah.
I asked for a better show.
I love Theo Katzman, the guy who's supporting him as well. I'm jealous that he didn't come to Paris because
I started listening to Theo's stuff probably like 2 months ago, and I love Romance Without Finance. Like,
it's like my favorite album of last year. It's amazing.
It is. And Brooklyn is seriously one of my favorite songs.
Yeah, it's awesome. The White Picket Castles on that. Mm-hmm. Sorry, you don't have to include this in the podcast, Karen. You totally can. But White Picket Castles is really, really beautiful, and it's such a good album. Anyway. Theo Katzman, ladies and gentlemen, you should listen to his album Romance Without Finance. He's very cool. God. And Darren Criss, he is some unknown up-and-coming actor. You may or may not have heard of him. You know, you could go support him too if you want to.
He's amazing.
Yeah. No, it was really cool. I'm really stoked that I went. So, yeah, he's very sweet as usual and very kind and very talented and very awesome. And he should be on Teen Wolf instead of Glee.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
I think he'd love that cast, actually. No, there was a reason I was bringing up. Yeah, he went to school with Robin Williams' children.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I was. So when you were talking about Zelda Williams, he was talking about it the other day, actually, about at the Q&A. He was like, because Robin Williams was. Long story. This is actually relevant. I knew I brought this up for a reason. I'm tying it all back together. He was influenced to become an actor by basically seeing the way people reacted to the genie in Aladdin and being like, oh my God, I want to, like, everyone's loving this together. I want to do that for people. And then he was kind of like, I want to be the genie. And his mother's like, that's an actor. He's like, I want to be an actor. Anyway, so that was like his big influence, Robin Williams, because he's from San Francisco and like all of that as well. He was like, oh yeah, and I went to school with his children. Like, he's from San Francisco and Robin Williams is from San Francisco. So I was just being like, wow, I wonder if he, like, they know each other, like Zelda Williams and Darren. So that was why I brought that up. I knew there was a reason. I wasn't telling. Interesting.
It does relate to Teen Wolf. Yes.
Yeah, it does. Cool. I tied it back together. I'm a perfect podcaster. Anyway, we can go now. All right. Okay. Well, goodbye, all. I hope you enjoyed this week. And be excellent to yourselves and each other, or whatever it is. So, yeah. Bye, Karen.
Bye. Bye, guys.
Bye.
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 I liked
that Karen's gonna put that in the bloopers.
Yes, I am.
We literally kept reciting.